Baba's home, my little sister shouts as I turn into our street. Electra is a plump six-year-old, a fuzzy peach with tawny hair. When we go inside, Father is at the table, in the front room, smoking, a glass of cloudy liqueur sitting at his elbow. He's freshly bathed and smells of eau de cologne. All the same, you can still catch a whiff of the sea salt on his skin. Ah, my son, well met, Baba says, scooping me in his arms. He kisses my cheek. His whiskers need a shave. Smoke rises from his mouth and nostrils. Before I can say anything, my ma calls from the kitchen. Where the devil have you been? I needed help to unpack and you disappear. Is this what we can expect from you? No one replies. It's best to let her get it off her chest. My father puffs on his cigarette and sips the liqueur. How many times do I have to tell you? My mother calls out again. It's not safe anymore. You can't wander around like the old days. Tell him, she commands my father. Baba's eyes see through the opposite wall and far away. It's hard to know what's in his head. Come get your dinner, Mama calls. Quickly, we're going to Aunt Vasiliki's. I hop off Baba's lap and we all gather in the kitchen. While I mop up the chickpea, rice and yogurt soup with crusty bread, Baba crushes his cigarette in the glass ashtray and lights another. Your mother's right, he says. It isn't safe to wander the streets by yourself. I ask him why not. I've told you 100 times, don't you listen? The government's turned the island into an open prison. That's what Tenedos is now, an open prison. He gets angry, blasphemes. Then he continues in a defeated voice. They've shipped criminals and mad people here. They're living in the houses that were abandoned by the Greeks, free to wander round and do as they please. I ask him why the Turkish government would do such a thing. It doesn't make sense. Because they hate Greeks, my mother raises her voice. Be quiet, wife, my father says. He tells Electra to close the front door. She slides off the chair and does as she's told. They want to drive us out, my mother continues undeterred. They want us to go. What better way to get rid of us than to fill the neighborhood with cutthroats and maniacs? How quickly they forget what their precious Ataturk said. You don't have to be a Muslim to be a Turk. That's what he said. A shared language, a culture, tradition, and connections to the land, that's enough to make a Turk of anyone. But these nationalists won't rest until we're all Muslims or dead, God forbid. She goes quiet as if a great bird had swooped in and carried her away. When Baba returns from the sea, the first thing he wants to do is gather his wife and kids and visit the old family home in the Cauldron district. He was born in that house. It's by the water at the end of a narrow street that opens onto a square. His younger sister Vasiliki lives there with her husband Yanni and their teenage daughter Zoe. Baba does not have other family. It's just him and his sister. The others are dead or in America. And since the living are as quiet as those that passed away, it amounts to the same thing. When visiting his sister, Baba sits quietly in the guest room and, over the space of 2 or 3 hours, he knits his body back together again, minute by minute, the flesh and bone that on the wave became gauzy as cheesecloth, turns thick as a woolen jumper, regaining its vitality and substance. After a cup of Turkish coffee and a healthy dose of rakı, he's whole again and can get on with his life. When it's time to leave, I plead with my mother to let me stay the night. Electra is already asleep. My father drapes her over his shoulder and off they go. The following morning, Uncle Yanni and I walk with the sea at our backs. But on Tenedos, the sea is never behind you. It's in front, behind, and at your side. Its secret currents run in a circle above and below. Our house is almost on the edge of the village, close to one of the 3 schools. This time of the morning, everything, even the ruined houses and the garbage-strewn lots, seem fresh and clean as a just-picked melon. Uncle is not a seaman. He's heading for the fields. He kisses the top of my head and leaves me on our doorstep. The minute I step into the living room, it's in the air, or rather it's not. This morning, Baba's already left on another fishing expedition, and the fishy smell has gone with him. First things first, I feed Byron, I pet him and go back into the kitchen. Electra is eating breakfast, a huge white bow atop her head. It's her first day of school and she doesn't look happy about it. My mother has her back turned. She's leaning into the washing trough, up to her elbows in soap suds. Heidi, she throws at me over her shoulder. Get into your uniform, eat something. It's time for school. And you, she says to Electra, stop crying, or I'll give you something to really cry about. On the last word, she turns and locks eyes with me. Her full walnut hair almost manages to draw attention away from a swollen lip and the purple ridge that runs down the left side of her face. Her expression dares me to say something. My eyes turn away, ashamed. She has misbehaved again. Amya is leaning on the stoop next door, a coffee cup in hand. Soft tendrils of steam make a ladder to heaven. She is my maternal grandmother's sister. As it is early, her hair hangs loose and wispy down her back. Electra and I walk past hand in hand. Good luck, my little angels, Amya calls. Learn plenty. She waves. In a little while, her golden-haired daughter Athena will come out. They will sit in wicker chairs and the daughter will brush her mother's long grey hair and coil it into a grizzled braid. Because you're not a Turk, may the bread you eat be poisonous. That's how grade 3 at Independence Primary School started, first thing in the morning, before the class had its regulation bread roll and milk at 10. With these 13 words, my appetite flew out the window. Because you're not a Turk, may the bread you eat be poisonous. It's a shame because until then I thought she was going to be a good teacher. This blonde, tall as a poplar woman, a bit pallid and thin-lipped, but you can't blame her for that. It stayed with me what she said. I thought about it for the rest of the day, between breaking into a sweat over sums and sticking the correct suffix on a root word. Half the kids in class are Greek, the other half Turkish. During Monday morning assembly, we all salute the white and red Turkish flag and sing the national anthem. Our fingernails must be sparkling clean and shoes polished to a shine. The Turkish boys are circumcised and the Greek boys aren't. Aside from that, there's no difference between us that I can see. But that means nothing to this sow from the mainland. Half her students are Greek, so they deserve to die. They're lower than dogs. Loathing has settled in her eyes. She has a rock where her heart ought to be. I'd go home, except I'll be beaten and sent back again. I've got no say in anything. My mother believes in a good education. She's literate in Greek and Turkish, and she's a miracle at sums. My father, on the other hand, he can barely write his own name, poor thing. In either language. He puts a cross where his signature ought to be, cancelling himself out. Or maybe he's trying to multiply himself. I don't know. Things turned out that way because he left school before his voice broke. First he herded goats. Then, when he was old enough, he went to sea. Don't be like him, my mother is in the habit of saying. A piece of wood. My father speaks Islander Greek and Turkish, crackly as a thyme bush and full of rocky landslides. When you live in a place, you stop seeing it. Your thoughts take on the shape of the landscape. Your vowels become round as the hills and your consonants jagged as the coastline. Behind each sentence is the gurgle of the sea. Baba says Greeks from Istanbul look down their noses when islanders open their mouths. Mama reckons he doesn't know what he's talking about. People from the city are civilized, she sniffs, not barbarians. When Baba steps ashore, gaunt and gangly and flapping in his unwashed clothes, he brings gifts from the sea. They're from Poseidon, he declares, handing them out to us. There's a pink as a baby's tongue conch for me, a fancy twist of a shell for Electra, and Mama's palms froth with a frilly brown sponge. Baba acts as though he's given her something truly special. He laughs and he smiles. When the men are at sea, Tenedos becomes an island of women. Only the old men are left behind and the two young. Some things you learn at school, others you learn in the streets. A learning I made in the streets is this. Women keep going, same as always, dawn till dusk. They put their backs into everything they do, whether they're doubled up crones or fresh as a May plum, and then they curl up and die. It's not like that with the men. If they can put up their feet and have a snooze, they will. Baba is out there, fishing and diving for sponge. When he grows old, he'll join the men in the cafetière, fiddling with his worry beads and getting drawn into card games he could do without. It's night. Mama is sitting on a divan, with her legs curled under her. She is listening to the world seep out of the sparkly gold cloth that covers the radio speakers. I'm helping Electra learn the alphabet. Baba is gone again. The radio is my mother's prized possession. If we are to be rescued from our isolation, she declares, we must make the affairs of the world our own. Her eyes flash, and her hands disturb the air when she speaks. When the batteries start to fade, she calls out, Dimitro, the world is departing. Batteries, we must have batteries. If I don't hurry, and the radio stops broadcasting in the middle of a program, she calls out, Dimitro, the radio's dead. Quickly, put on your shoes and go to the grocer. Here's some money, two batteries. First, Mama listens to Greek news from across the border. Makarios and his nationalists are still stirring up trouble in Cyprus. Mama huffs and puffs, pulling her collar as if she's suffocating. It's going to happen again, she says, shaking her insolent head. I can smell it in the air. They're going to kill us or ship us all off. She changes stations in the scant light. Greek from over the border 1 minute, Turkish from Anatolia the next. When Electra and I go to bed, sounds rise through the floorboards. A barely audible click of knitting needles, the delicate sound of a tulip tea glass returning to its saucer, the Turkish melodies that tangle with our dreams. Mama adjusts the dial and another tongue pours forth, different yet familiar. It's Greek, the mother tongue. Yet it lacks the yearning qualities of Turkish that carry in every note the music of the steps. I can't read or write Greek. I simply open my mouth and out comes the talk. Only it's not proper Greek, it's Rumji. A mixture of Greek and Turkish, dovetailing into one another. By the time a word or phrase leaves my mouth, it's done a complete about-face. Greek turns to Turkish, Turkish turns to Greek. The words copulating on my tongue make my mouth fizzy. Why the Turks changed the name of the island is beyond me. The island has been called Tenedos since antiquity. Bozcaada is the new Turkish name. It means barren island. I can't tell a lie, except for the needle pine forests that give the island its wild, melodious tone. There aren't too many trees hereabouts, but look around you. Tenedos is piled high with watermelon, grape, apricot, almond, quince, cherry, and mulberry. You can see for yourself that water virtually bubbles out of the ground. Springs and wells are everywhere. Calling the kingdom of Tennis, Barren Island is insulting.